In the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, what New Orleans evacuees hoped would be nothing more than an extended weekend instead turned into an agonizingly prolonged exile when the levees failed. Communication with friends and family became an immediate concern. Because the evacuation of the city happened so quickly, at first the concerns were for the safety of loved ones, but there weren't any phones working in the 504 area code, including cell phones. That's when evacuees discovered the power of the Internet. Through group emails and online message boards, Katrina refugees reconnected and then began to ask questions and to seek answers from eyewitnesses about the condition of their homes. Very soon thereafter, personal blogs became more than just diaries. They became tools of civic activism. In perhaps an unprecedented manner, the Internet has become for New Orleanians an essential tool for reestablishing personal connections, for sharing stories, for communicating the will of residents, and for fighting for desperately needed answers and resources from every level of government. New Orleans bloggers Karen Gadwa and Laureen Lentz have become champions of many causes, but their primary focus is preserving New Orleans' historic heritage in a blog called Squandered Heritage. They were interviewed at the end of a horrific week in January, which saw the murder of filmmaker and mother Helen Hill, and in the previous week, the murder of teacher and Hot 8 Brass Band member and father, Denaryl Shavers. New Orleans residents are still reeling from those murders and from the fear that a rising crime rate will more surely finish off the city than did the broken levees and a laggard recovery. Karen Gadwa delivered a speech at the 5,000-strong March Against Violence on City Hall. She inveighed against politicians and a bureaucracy which aren't adequately responding to a vast array of needs at a time when citizens are more active than ever and better informed than ever. Next on Community Gumbo, blogging, civic activism, and media democracy in the rebuilding of New Orleans.
Well, my name's Karen Gadwa, and I work on a blog called Squandered Heritage with Laureen Lentz.
And I'm Laureen Lentz, and I've lived in New Orleans for about 11 years, and I've been working on Squandered Heritage with Karen for a couple of months, just documenting demolitions, and I also write for Metroblogging for the past year.
What is Squandered Heritage?
Well, Squandered Heritage started because I was interested in demolitions in general and had feared a lot of homes demolished that didn't necessarily need to be demolished. And when I started my little neighborhood blog and realized it was a pretty quick and easy and inexpensive way to communicate, it just morphed into this next blog, which was about demolitions and how we were seeing this rapid fire execution and bypassing of process in order for people to get their homes torn down. And I had read Laureen, and we had never met. I had read her work in Metroblogs and really wanted to meet her because we have a similar sense of humor, which you definitely need to do this because it's pretty depressing.
How did Squandered Heritage come about? What made that possible?
I met Alan Gutierrez at a meeting, and he approached me about starting a blog for my neighborhood, and I thought he was nuts, and I didn't have a camera. I had an email account, but I had no computer knowledge whatsoever. And with Alan and Bart Everson of Mid-City, they held my hand and harassed me through the process. So Alan's organization, Think New Orleans, has been really pivotal in getting people to recognize that there is information that should be shared, and public information. And we need to avail ourselves of this information. And he has really spent a lot of time working on that. We are publishing information that is already public record. And what we're doing is, if you want to know about a demolition in your neighborhood, for instance, you have to know what day to look in the paper to see a tiny classified. The postings on the houses aren't happening, so you wouldn't see it from riding by. So what we're doing is we're taking public information and making it permanently accessible instead of it was in Wednesday's Times-Picayune and you didn't get the paper that day. This way, it is a true permanent public record. And I realize there's some barriers to the Internet, but that's what we have to work with. That's our form right now. And I think it's threatening to people to have information out there in a freely accessible manner. And I've heard from people that are threatened by what that means.
Tell me a little bit more about how this works. Do you search public records, or you find something in the newspaper, and then you go to that neighborhood, or you go to that house and take a picture of it and post it? How does that work?
Well, we were aware that there was a FEMA list, and we, through the PRC and other agencies, we accessed the FEMA list. So we have the list of people who have applied to have a free FEMA demolition, and then the HCDRC, which is the Housing Conservation
District Review
Committee, which is a mouthful, meets every 2 weeks, and we knew that they generate a list. So it was just trying to consolidate these different lists and then go and visit the houses. And at first, for me, when I was doing it by myself, I would get to the house and 90% of the time say, why is this house getting torn down? I must have the wrong address. Go home, look it up again, and then go back. I went back 3 and 4 times to certain houses because I couldn't believe they were getting torn down. When you have houses that are in clear danger of falling down. So it just led me to this sort of path of recognizing that public information is really only public information if the public can access it.
I think some people might suggest that you might be slowing down the progress of the recovery by impeding people doing what they need to do with their houses. How would you respond to that?
Well, you'd first have to take it out of the context of your own personal experience. And therefore, most of us have a home or would like to have a home. And so we can't imagine that anyone would destroy a viable piece of property because it goes against logic. But when you start to look into these demolitions, you see that there are absentee landlords or owners by succession or people who just don't have clear and solid information about what they can do with their homes and are demolishing them because they feel lost. And there was a house on my street that had 17% damage. There was no water in it. It was a perfectly fine house, and it was demolished. And my argument about people who think holding up the recovery would be this house could be back serving people. There could be 2 families living in this house now. And now it's a vacant lot with no clear plans. So it's what is holding up the recovery is not the lack of demolitions. What's holding up the recovery is a lack of clear direction and funding and the road home and the state and the LRA and the mayor's office. Not a vacant lot strategy is not urban renewal.
Tell me about blogging, Lorene. Were you blogging before Hurricane Katrina?
I had started a blog, a really pedestrian blog on blogger.com for my home renovation in Treme. I had finally taken the step to buy a blighted home in a high-risk neighborhood to make a contribution to the city, and it was also a good investment. And so I started doing that because I got tired of emailing updates over and over to people about what was happening with the house. So this was a great way for people to just follow the progress. And then after Katrina, I realized I couldn't wait to get back because I knew so many people were outside of the city. And when I went to graduate school in Washington, D.C., I had hungered so much for on-the-ground information and photographs of my neighborhoods and daily life in New Orleans that I said, well, I can go back and provide this perhaps to people who are in Houston, in Baton Rouge, a really local perspective. And I looked at what other people were doing on metro blogging. I said, what can I do to add to the content? I felt a duty to start writing for metro blogging, and I feel very fortunate that it's been challenging and engaging, and it keeps me engaged in my community and to go out and see what's happening. Because as part of that duty to tell other people what's happening.
Let's stay on the topic of blogging generally just for a moment. I think a lot of people have the wrong impression of what blogging is. Even people in the print media that I've talked to don't visit blogs because they associate it, I think, with sort of like the online dating scene or MySpace pages or something like that. But it's quite a bit more than that, especially post-Katrina. Am I right?
I was up late about a week and a half ago watching C-SPAN, and there was a panel talking about media, poverty, racism, issues that have been very close to the surface since Katrina. And there was a woman there who's blogging, and she was an attorney, like working in the DA's office. And so they talked about, because of the corporatization of the mainstream media, that now these personal level stories, people crave them more, just like I was saying I did, that I couldn't get enough of it. The Times-Picayune was not providing what I wanted to know about as if I was home. So I think blogs have their own niche for citizen journalism. And it's when people actually take the time to have a discipline about what they're writing, research some facts, and not just tell just their venting, that it, to me, isn't very useful. I don't find the blog a blog to be useful to hear about venting. I want to hear information that someone is unique perspective or story, personal story, can provide that a newspaper can't sell. So,
although we were talking about histrionics a little bit earlier, just in public forums and public meetings, and one of the things that's unique about blogging is that there are people who can be a little bit more, say, excited or even shrill, and that's something that you don't really see much, at least you do in right-wing radio, right, but not much in mainstream, not much in the mainstream press, and so it's easier in a blog format to really focus attention in a very dramatic way on issues that people are emotional about.
It is true freedom of speech. More so than newspapers, far more so than any mainstream corporate media.
Is blogging an example of revolutionary civic democracy, or is it an indictment of the way media is structured in our country, or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, democracy is sort of a joke. We've all been living it for a year, and we've seen only how far we can go. We have to affect our local community, our block, and just this on the smallest level is where we can really make a difference. We can't expect it to come top down.
What are some of the battles you've been fighting?
Well, the power of the photograph is making some people feel, I think, exposed. Because the agencies we're dealing with, HDLC, HCRDC, they're overwhelmed. And they can't necessarily, as Karen said, maybe go out and post the notices they're supposed to post on the houses because everybody's understaffed and overwhelmed. So it's helpful that they have found some of the committee members for us to get the agenda, photograph the houses, get them up on the website so they can, if they can't visit all of these houses. And so when they get the applications, because we've been to the houses, we also see the presentations at the meetings, and we can see if there is any discrepancy between the reality on the ground and the appeal, which is sometimes an application filed by a demolition company. And then in the investigation of the handful of properties where we are questioning, we don't question every demolition. We want to document them first. These are going to be gone. Some of them are clearly, no-brainer. And it has to be demolished for this family to move forward. But we want to document that that was there because we were alarmed driving by lots and not being able to remember what was there. So we have a handful of properties like Apricot Street, and we found the discrepancy between the FEMA criteria, which is a 50% damage assessment by the city, and then the city's own damage assessment on that property was 17%. So we said something's wrong in the process. This was an error, and Mike Centennial even admitted it in an email that something happened and this was an error, which is, to me, phenomenal that we even have someone to say, I think we made a mistake. And so we're looking, we put in a public request for information to get the inspection reports and the demolition applications so we can find out what's happening in the process. But at first we were told, when we asked the city attorney's office, the first thing we were told was that homeowner has a right to demolish that property, and that is private information. And I asked three attorneys, including Stacy Head, I said, isn't that public information? And not one attorney questioned it. They said, that's absolutely public information. So then we went back to Pete Hamilton at the city attorney's office, and he said, well, some parts of that are public information. It's public, FEMA especially, it's public funds. So we really do need to question, and we know, we've seen what FEMA's failures can be. They're irreversible. So we need to be watching these government agencies like the Army Corps and FEMA and hold them accountable for what they're doing now.
That's Councilwoman Stacy Head and Mike Centennial, the head of the Permits Department.
Safety and Permits. Mm-hmm.
It appears to me, looking at the Squandered Heritage website, that you focus on what look like historic properties, properties that fit into the character of particular neighborhoods. Am I right about that?
I'm really adamant about doing a good cross-section. So there's a lot, quite frankly, in the Holy Cross area that's slab, but I'm insisting on putting that up there too. I want people to go back 10 years from now and whatever neighborhood they're in, see what was there before. And because so much of Holy Cross is clearing, it's totally clearing. And people will drive over there and they'll say, when did this happen? When did it disappear?
Have you had any successes in your battles?
Well, we have we have had successes, and the greatest success may not necessarily be a building, but for instance, there's a hearing on Monday, HC, the
HDLC?
No, H, it's the H,
HCD.
Yeah, it's the Housing Conservation.
We just call it the HCDVD.
We have our own funny names for it. But it's a block of buildings in Holly Grove, which are being, they're requesting demolition to do a higher density project. And when I went to take the photos of the buildings, which I think are quite nice myself, the property owners adjacent to it had no idea that this was taking place. And I spoke to a number of folks that are very active in that community, and they now know. To me, a huge success, because it allows them to be engaged in a process at the very ground level, which is when you demolish. And the interest in that case isn't so much in those specific buildings, although I think they're great buildings, but rather in that there was a very damaged community, and it has a slow return rate. And the folks that are there and participating are anxious and need to know what kind of development is planned for their community. So that's a success, I think, just in notification.
It's going to be a higher density development because why? Because the person who owns the property wants to generate more revenue?
It's a go-zone project. You know, I say that these projects are born out of the BNOB and their mandate for higher density. And since that BNOB seems to be a fading memory, the call for higher density seems ironic, since we have a city full of vacant houses that could be brought back into service. So the idea that we're spending go-zone money to make essentially low-income housing, when one, we're having issues with our low-income housing projects being demolished, and we're talking about decentralizing poverty, yet we're funding what is essentially a housing project.
Is there an affordable housing plan in New Orleans?
If it is, it's a secret. I haven't heard of one that makes any sense. It seems the plan is to get rid of, to eradicate the city of its ills by demolition.
In planning meetings that you've attended as part of the Unified New Orleans plan process, do those plans include affordable housing ideas or affordable housing concepts?
in my neighborhood, we very much wanted to include this in the plan. Our feeling was that we live in a wet neighborhood adjacent to a dry neighborhood, and that we have a lot of great old historic housing stock, and we would be well served by getting that housing back up and running. What we thought would be a great idea is to have first responders, first home buying projects. And we were pretty much shot down by the unified plan. So they really had no place in their conversation for that, unfortunately.
Planners or the administrators of the Unified New Orleans plan?
I think that the administrators of the plan sent the message to the planners that this wasn't going to be in the conversation. In fact, in our plan, the number one project is the Carrollton Shopping Center, which seems comedic at best.